Because I primarily garden in raised beds that are about 10 to 12 inches deep, until a couple of years ago, I had only tried growing potatoes once. And that is, I tried growing them in feed sacks, and it really didn't go so well. A big part of the reason why I didn't try growing potatoes here is because I thought you needed a depth and a quality of soil that I don't have. This is the Homestead Journey Podcast, the podcast dedicated to the pursuit of self-sufficiency, self-reliance, and sustainability. Hey there, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of the Homestead Journey Podcast. This is episode number 133, and I am your host, Brian Wells, coming to you from 3B Farm and Homestead here in beautiful upstate New York. And folks, before we jump into this week's episode, I did want to share with you some very exciting news. And that is that the interview that I mentioned on last week's episode that I was a part of was actually released this week. And so if you head on over to medium.com/authority-magazine and just use the search feature and type in Brian Wells or the Homestead Journey Podcast, that will pop up. I also have shared this on all of my social media accounts. So another great reason for you to follow us on Facebook and Instagram and all the places. It certainly was an honor to be interviewed by that publication. And so if you're interested in checking that out, head on over to medium.com/authority-magazine to look that up or look for the link on our social media accounts. All right, let's hop over to this week's Homestead Happenings, and I will bring you up to speed with what else we've been up to here on 3B Farm and Homestead. This week, I had a bit of a scary situation happen with some of our pigs. I believe it was Tuesday. I came home for lunch, as is my usual practice. I came in the house, was starting to make something to eat, when all of a sudden I started hearing, it was almost like a bark, but a wheeze and a moan. And it was just this really weird noise that I don't believe I've ever heard before. And so I went in search of it. And as I walked out our front door, I looked down towards the pigs, which was the direction that the noise was coming from. And I happened to notice that there was a pig outside. And as I got closer, I realized that my boy Boris was laying there outside the pen where the girls are. And he was kind of laying on his side. He was flailing his legs and he was making this really, really weird noise. And I'm trying to figure out what's going on. Always in the back of my mind is the whole tetanus situation that I had with that one pig several years ago. And he was kind of acting the same way and making some of the same noises. And it was just really, really weird. Again, something that I never really had seen before exactly like that. And so as I was standing there trying to figure out what to do and trying to think, well, could he have gotten into something, maybe some kind of poison, or has he gotten into some kind of a noxious plant? Or I was just trying to go through all of the scenarios in my head. I thought, well, maybe I need to take his temperature. And so I went and I got the thermometer and I took his temperature and it was elevated. It was 105.1, which is definitely elevated for a pig. I believe normal range is like 101.9 to like 102.9. So certainly an elevated temperature. So I'm trying to think, well, what in the world could this be? What kind of a sickness is this? And of course, now he's right next to the sows. I'm thinking, has he transmitted this disease, whatever it is, to them? As I'm thinking about him having this elevated temperature, I thought, well, let me give him some water to drink. And I had a bucket of water there. I tipped it down so he could kind of get his head in it. And he drank a couple of sips, and then he just starts banging with his head to try to tip the bucket out of my hand. And then he just starts rolling around in the water. So I'm thinking, okay, he's trying to cool off. So I went and got the hose and I just started hosing him down. And as I start hosing him down, he quit the flailing that he was doing. He rolled over onto his stomach, and then eventually he got up, and I just kept hosing him down, and then finally he had enough of it, and he started walking away. So at this point, I'm still trying to figure out what in the world's going on. How can I get him back to where he needs to be? Because he was not interested at all in food. I was trying to use the marshmallows. He wasn't interested in marshmallows. He kind of walked behind the shelter for the females, and he got underneath the tarp. And so I'm thinking, okay, yes, he's trying to get himself cooled off. But at this point, I'm still not sure why he's overheated. But my first concern was I can't leave him out. I've got to get him back to where he needs to go. And I'm not able to lead him where he's supposed to go with food. I'm not able to get him to go with marshmallows. So let me see if I can push him around. Now, if you've ever been around pigs much, you don't really push a pig around, especially a big pig. They're not going where they don't want to go. But he was so exhausted that I just kind of grabbed his tail and started pushing him. And he was grunting. I could tell he wasn't pleased with the situation, but he just had no fight left in him. And I was able to kind of use his tail and push him down towards his pen. And as I was starting to put him into his pen, I realized his back was all cut up. I'm trying to think, what in the world could that have been? Did he hurt himself when he was going under the fence? Did he try to go under another fence and hurt himself there? And then all of a sudden it popped in my head. Has he been fighting with Bear again? And so I went in search of Bear. I called Bear and he comes trotting up over the hill like he doesn't have a care in the world, but I could see he was a bloody mess. And then as I looked at the fence going into Bear's pen, I could see where Boris had pushed through and bent the hog panel up to get underneath there. And evidently, he and Bear had gotten into a scrap, and Boris came out on the losing end. So thank God it wasn't any worse than it was. But man, I have just had a horrible run this year of keeping pigs where they're supposed to be. So I've got Boris back where he's supposed to be. He slept most of that day. I think he did eat supper. But by the next day, he was totally fine, like nothing had ever happened. But it was scary. I had no idea what in the world would cause him to kind of flail. It was almost like he was having a seizure. And then he's making this barking slash oinking slash moaning slash. It was just the weirdest sounds I've ever heard. But thank God it appears that all it was a pig fight, and he got his butt handed to him once more by Bear. Anyhow, some other news with regards to our pigs. This week, I finished weaning all of our piglets. So they're now down in the weaning pen, kind of the lower end of our yard. And then by doing that, it gave me an opportunity to take the two bigger sows and move them back in with the feeder pigs. And then I was able to get the smaller sow isolated. She was doing most of the work, I think, as far as feeding the little piglets. And she just has lost condition way beyond what I feel comfortable with. Unfortunately, because I had the two bigger sows in there, it didn't matter how much food I tried to give her, they would bump her off the food and they would steal it. So she now is isolated and I'm able to just regulate the feed for her only. The other two sows are in with the feeder pigs and life is good, or is, well, as good as it's going to be right now with my pig situation. Moving on from the pigs to the meat chickens. Our meat chickens are doing well. We did lose another one this week. Not sure what happened. And there's another one that it seems like it's got some leg problems, so I'm not sure if it's going to survive. We had actually planned on butchering them yesterday, but my dad's are really small. And mine, I'm not quite sure what they would have dressed out at if we would have dressed them off yesterday, but it certainly would have been on the smaller end of what I really want. And so we've made the determination that we're going to push it out about a week and a half. So we're not going to do it this coming Wednesday, but a week from Wednesday is going to be butchering day for us. Hopefully I don't lose any more birds and fingers crossed, the one with the bum leg's going to make it through till then. But anyhow, that's our meat bird situation. And it really ended up working to my benefit that we didn't butcher yesterday, because I was a little late in ordering a new freezer. One of our freezers died about a month and a half ago. And I think I mentioned that on the podcast. And so I've been looking for a new upright freezer. I'd been looking on Facebook Marketplace. Wasn't sure if I wanted to go the used route or not. Anyhow, long story short, I was able to find a deal of the day on Lowe's website last week, but I wasn't able to go pick it up until yesterday. So we do have the new freezer here. It's one of the biggest that they offer. I think it's like a 21.2 or a 21.3 cubic foot freezer. So very excited about that. I haven't plugged it in yet. I'm actually going to move some stuff around from some of our other freezers and give them an opportunity to defrost. I'm going to take all of the stuff that's in our chest freezer, and eventually that's going to make its way into the new upright freezer, and then into the chest freezer is only going to go the chickens. And that way we're not going to be losing stuff in the chest freezer like we have in the past. So I think that's going to help us manage our freezer inventory a little bit better. Let's move on to a bit of a garden update. So this week I was able to finally get the beds fully planted. I do have a few squares in the raised beds that I need to go back through and replant. There's a few places where brassicas didn't survive the transplanting. I've got a couple of beds where things didn't sprout very well, and so I'll replant those. I'm actually going to go pick up some brassicas from our local home and garden center. Hopefully, they still got some to kind of round out those squares, but I've at least attempted to plant everything in the raised beds and in the root stout bed as well. Yesterday, I went ahead and planted my last trellis area to pinto beans. And I also put in some Dickinson pumpkins. Now, Dickinson pumpkins are actually the pumpkins that are used by Libby's to make the canned pumpkin that you buy at the store. And so I'm just intrigued to see how they measure up when you grow them on your own. And I had totally forgotten that I had ordered those seeds until I went to plant the pinto beans yesterday, and that packet of pumpkin seeds fell out. And so what I ended up doing is just planting them at one end of the trellis, and I'm going to see if I can get them to run the trellis. And then I planted the rest of the trellis to the pinto beans. And now that does mean that the root stout bed is entirely planted. I may try to put in a few onions here or there, but as far as I'm concerned, both the raised bed and the root stout bed areas are fully planted. Then this week, I also moved on to some experiments. I am trying potatoes a couple of different ways. We're going to talk about that more in depth in the Charting the Course segment, but I'm really excited about those methods that I'm trying. And then I was able to get my green stalk planter filled with potting soil and put together yesterday, and I was able to get everything planted. Now, initially I'd planned on putting that at the end of my porch, but as I looked at it, I just didn't feel like it was going to get enough sun there. And so I decided I was going to put it out on what we refer to as our patio area. It's where we have a picnic table, and it's where we also have a little bit of a fireplace. Now, to be frank, we have not utilized that area as much as I would like to use it. And I'm hoping that I haven't made a mistake by putting this over in that patio area because, as they say, out of sight, out of mind. My hope is this will cause me to go use that patio area more. We'll see. But one of the problems that I had is that patio area is not fully level. And one of the things with this green stalk planter is that it's very important that you start with a very level base. Otherwise, it's just going to tip over and it's going to just fall. As I was trying to come up with this level base, I was wiggling it and I got a little too exuberant and wiggling it, and I lost three of my tiers, boom, upside down, potting soil on the ground. So I had to try to gather that up and not waste much of it, but I also didn't want to get a bunch of weed seed in there. So once I got everything all put together, some of my tiers are a little light as far as the potting soil goes, but it is what it is. I had what I had. I wasn't going to try to go run down more potting soil. I filled it up as best I could, and I planted a variety of different things in there. And it was really, really random. I did not have any kind of a beautiful plan. I just wanted to experiment to see how are beets going to do in there? How is spinach going to do in there? They say you can plant tomatoes. Okay, let me try planting tomatoes in there. I planted eggplant. I planted herbs, lettuce, just a variety of different things. And it was just kind of onesie twosie. I don't think I planted more than two pockets to any one thing because I just wanted to have a good try at a variety of different things just to see how different things do in that green stalk planter. One of the things that I did buy, it's an add-on, is a spinner base. It's kind of like, think of it as a Lazy Susan. So this tower sits on that and it spins around. And so not only does that give you an opportunity to maybe get certain crops into maybe a little bit of a better sunlight situation, but also makes it easier to maintain it. And it's going to make it easier to harvest things. So overall, the setup to it was very easy. The biggest problem for me was just really getting things level. And that's not the fault of the planter. That's the fault of the area in which I put it. But I'm looking forward to giving it a try. There's many big name YouTubers that have been using them for a couple of years. Jack Polner's giving it a try. Don Bradner over at Little Mountain Life is giving them a try. And so my plan is to give them a whirl this year, kind of see whether I like it, whether I don't like it, what does well, what doesn't do well. And then my plan is next year to do a full review as far as how things went with that garden planter. So more to come on that, but I was very excited to get that done. The last thing I wanted to share with you is I was able to do one of my favorite things of all on the homestead this weekend, and that is make jam. I love, love, love to make jam. I love to make jellies. I just find it so satisfying and so enjoyable. And so strawberry season is upon us. So I made two batches of regular strawberry jam. Our rhubarb has come on here, something fierce. And so I was able to harvest the first rhubarb from the homestead and add that to some strawberries and make a batch of strawberry rhubarb jam. My hope this week is to make some rhubarb jam, which I absolutely love. I also want to make some rhubarb sauce. And my mom also has a recipe that I want to get from her of a rhubarb barbecue sauce. And so hopefully I'll be able to find time to do that this week. Do have a lot of things going on this coming week, but that is on the docket and just so very, very excited about doing that. All right, that's what we've been up to here on the homestead. A very, very busy week. It's going to be a busy week coming up, but it's just so exciting to see the garden coming into its own. We're starting to be able to harvest things. We had lettuce from it this week. My radishes are coming on. I need to get up there and start picking those. It's just so exciting to start seeing the hard work paying off and enjoying the fruits of our labor. It's been a great week here on the homestead, folks. And I hope it's been a great week where you're at. All right, let's jump on over to this week's Charting the Course. So today we're going to talk about potatoes. Now, potatoes are a crop that, in my opinion, you really get a lot of bang for your buck as far as the amount of product that they yield for the amount of space that they take up. Because I primarily garden in raised beds that are about 10 to 12 inches deep, until a couple of years ago, I had only tried growing potatoes once. And that is, I tried growing them in feed sacks and it really didn't go so well. A big part of the reason why I didn't try growing potatoes here is because I thought you needed a depth and a quality of soil that I don't have. You see, the only way that I had ever seen potatoes grown until my experiment with the feed sack was in the ground. People would dig trenches, maybe 8 inches in depth. They would then put the seed potatoes in there. They would cover them with a couple of inches of dirt. And then as the potatoes sprouted and started growing up, they would start covering those plants with more soil. And eventually they would fill in that trench. And as the potatoes grew, they would start doing what we refer to as hilling them, which means you just keep adding dirt, creating this mound. And then when the potato tops died off, they would dig them up with a potato fork and spades. And so, in other words, not only did growing potatoes take a depth of soil that I don't have and a quality of soil that I don't have, but it also required a level of effort, quite frankly, that I didn't want to expend. Growing potatoes that way is very, very labor intensive. By the time you dig that trench and you're having to fill it in with dirt and then you're having to hill the potatoes, all of that kind of stuff, it's just very, very labor intensive. But today I want to share with you this. It does not have to be that way. Now, there's certainly nothing wrong with planting and harvesting potatoes in the ground in trenches. After all, people have done it that way for centuries, and people have done it that way very successfully for centuries. But there are methods available that make planting and growing and harvesting potatoes much easier. So today I want to talk about the three methods that we are using to grow potatoes on our homestead this year. And then after we talk about those, I'm going to briefly touch on a few other methods that I'm aware of that maybe you want to try. And so hopefully in all of this, it will spark some ideas and really set you up for success for growing potatoes. The first method that we're using on our homestead this year is the Ruth Stout method. And now that's a method that I discovered a couple of years ago. I've talked about it here on the podcast. The Ruth Stout method is a deep mulch method of gardening that utilizes hay as the deep mulch. And instead of planting the potatoes in the ground, you put them on top of the ground, you cover them with hay, and then instead of hilling the plants with dirt, as the potato plants grow, you just add hay, and the potatoes are growing in this mound of hay. When it comes time to actually harvest them, you just pull back the hay and there the potatoes are. It's very, very easy and much less labor intensive than having to dig the trench, pull in the dirt, hill the potatoes, go get the potato fork and spade, dig them up, dig through it all, and then much, much easier. And I really, really love it. But of course, I'm always looking to experiment. And so the second method that I'm using is the feed sack method. Now, I'm doing a little bit different this time than the last time I did it. The last time I did it, the way I did it is I rolled down the sides of the feed sack. I put 2 or 3 inches of compost in the bottom of that, put the seed potatoes in. And then as they sprouted, the idea with that is that you start unrolling the sides of the feed bag, adding more compost as you go. And then eventually you're going to have this feed sack full of potatoes as the potato plant grows up out of it. The only problem with that is that I didn't realize that potatoes come in two different varieties. They come in determinate and indeterminate varieties, just like tomatoes do. A determinate variety of potato means that there's a predetermined number of potatoes that that plant is going to give off. It's in its genetic DNA, and once that amount of tubers is developed on the plant, it's not developing anything more. With an indeterminate variety, it's going to continue to produce fruit as you add that dirt into that sack that's going to cause it to continue to put off more potatoes. Well, I didn't realize that, and I don't think I had the right variety of potato in my feed sack. So I added all that dirt, and I didn't get a huge amount of potatoes out of it. This year, I just figured what I'm going to do, I'm going to fill the feed sack all the way to the top. I'm going to throw seed potatoes in there, and I'm going to see what I get. And so that's what I've done. I've got 4 feed sacks out there filled with dirt, seed potatoes planted in there, a variety of different ones. No idea whether or not they're determinate or indeterminate varieties. I just threw them in there and we're going to see what happens. So that's experiment number two. The third method is the one that I'm really the most excited about, and it's what's called a potato tower. A couple of weeks ago, Jack Polner from the Mindful Homestead reached out to me and said, hey, you got any ideas for other ways of growing potatoes? And I said, well, hey, actually I do. My buddy Rob just sent me this information. Give it a whirl. And so Jack is actually trialing this as well and has actually put out a video about how they built their tower. But in essence, what you do is you take a length of some kind of fencing. In my case, it's 2x3 welded wire fencing. You connect the two sides with zip ties, and now you have this tube, and you just start filling that tube up with layers. Most people recommend using straw and compost. I didn't have any straw, so I used hay. I put in 6 inches of hay. I put in a couple of inches of compost, put my seed potatoes around the outside, about, I think, 5 to 7 inches apart, covered them with compost, covered them with another layer of 6 inches of hay, more compost, seed potatoes, compost, hay, so on and so forth, until I had, I think, 4 layers. Then in the very top, I put another layer of compost and I planted onions. I don't know if the onions are going to do anything, but I just figured, hey, why not? Let's give it a whirl. Let's see what happens. I actually think Jack did the same thing, and that may have been where the idea came from, but didn't want to waste that space. Put some compost on it, and then we'll see what happens. But the idea with this is that once the potatoes are done forming, all you do is you cut those zip ties, and boom, that thing collapses, and it's very, very easy for you to get those potatoes out without doing a whole lot of work. Other methods that I've heard about are people growing potatoes in towers made of tires, starting with that one tire filled with compost, put potatoes in there, then stack tires, keep adding compost. Again, that's going to work better with the indeterminate variety of potato. I've also heard of people doing a similar thing with a potato box, where you have a frame with 4 corners sticking up, and then as the potato plant starts growing up, you start adding slats, filling it with more compost, dirt, soil, whatever you want to put in there, and the potato keeps growing on up. Again, this is going to require an indeterminate variety of potato. A friend of mine from work by the name of Jeff, he tells about how his grandfather always raised potatoes in barrels. And then when it came time for harvest, his grandfather would kick over the barrel and say, go get them, Jeffy. And Jeff would just dive in and pick the potatoes out of the dirt. So all of that to say that a lack of depth of soil shouldn't keep you from growing potatoes like it did me. There's a lot of different ways that you can grow potatoes. And the whole, it takes a lot of work to grow potatoes thing shouldn't throw you off either, because it seems to me that some of these other methods, and we'll see how they produce, but certainly the Ruth Stout method has produced well for me, and it didn't have the level of effort that traditional potato gardening does, where you dig the trench and add the dirt and mound the dirt and hill it and then got to go get the potato fork and all that kind of stuff. The Ruth Stout method is absolutely beautiful, but I'm always looking for the next best thing. So very excited about the potato towers and the feed sacks. Now, even if you do have good depth of soil and you've been growing potatoes in the ground and maybe you enjoy doing that, I'd still recommend that you give one of these other methods a try to see if they work better for you or not. And then I'd love to have your feedback. If you've done it both ways, if you've done the dig the trench, plant the potato, hill them and harvest them, and then you've tried a potato tower, or you tried going in feed sacks, or you've tried growing in tires or a potato box or whatever, if you've tried an alternative method of planting potatoes, I'd love to hear from you and to see what your success has been and which method you've liked the best. That's it for this week, folks. I hope you've found this enjoyable. If you have any questions or you'd like to reach out to me, I can be reached via email, brian@thehomesteadjourney.net, or you can reach out to us on all the socials. I'm also very excited about next week's episode. Next week's episode is going to be an interview episode. I had an opportunity this week to speak with Claire from Start Small Homestead over on Instagram. Really enjoyed our conversation, and that's going to be next week's episode. Don't know if I'm going to get a chance to do a Homestead Happenings because we're going to be out of town most of the weekend next weekend, but that interview is coming up. Very excited about that. You're not going to want to miss it. So until next time, everybody, keep up the good work.